You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Kim Hahn. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, April 19th, 2018.
The reason it's been delayed is not for, procrastination or lack of interest. It's because it's been difficult to implement that project with I-69 not being done.
Coming up later in the program, City of Bloomington Communications Director Yael Cassander speaks with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about ongoing traffic delays due to major infrastructure projects around town. That's coming up later in today's feature report.
High schoolers across the country are expected to walk out of classes tomorrow. Hundreds of Bloomington High School North and South students are expected to leave their schools and march on the county courthouse. Voices in the Street ask area residents how they feel about the walkout for gun reform. That's coming up later in the program. But first, your daily headlines.
A new report finds that working families in Indiana are more likely to be poor than in neighboring states. The group of studies conducted by the Working Poor Families Project compared Indiana to Illinois, Kentucky, Michigan, and Ohio, as well as the nation as a whole. The study ranks Indiana as 19th in the nation for the percentage of working families whom are also low income. Indiana also ranks 34th in the nation when it comes to the average personal income. Those findings show Indiana slipping below pre-recession levels, even with the state's unemployment rate nearly as low as it was before the recession. Of its neighbors, only Kentucky fared worse for working families. This Working Poor Families Project brief also found that families of color are more likely to be poor in Indiana than in most neighboring states. Over half of the state's working class families of color are low-income households. That rate puts Indiana 39th in the country. The report says that, quote, racial and ethnic minorities are not disproportionately low income because of a lack of work effort, but because they are more likely to be working in low-paying occupations, unquote. In order for Indiana to recover, the Working Poor Families Project recommends providing better access to benefits like skills training and health care. The report also encourages anti-discrimination laws and increasing the opportunities for working-class families to earn retirement savings.
The Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority is extending the application deadline for its winter assistance program to June. The deadline is usually in mid-May, but Communication Director Brad Meadows says the IHCDA is extending the deadline due to this year's exceptionally cold winter and spring.
And we want to make sure that individuals that are eligible for the program do have a longer opportunity to apply this year because it has been a unique winter season, which is extended into April since we just had snow.
The local service providers are under contract with the Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority, which are community-based organizations. The agency is encouraging community-based organizations to do outreach to ensure that everyone who is qualified for the program has an opportunity to apply. All 92 Indiana counties have local service providers. Applicants can apply in person or online at in.gov/IHCDA. or through the mail. So far, the South Central Community Action Program has helped around 3,000 people in Monroe, Morgan, Owen, and Brown County. The Low-Income Energy Assistance Program is a federally funded program designed to help low-income families with the high cost of home energy. Meadows says the amount of money the Housing and Community Development Authority receives from the federal government varies. That means each household receives a different amount of money depending on their circumstances. In general, Meadows says each family can receive $400 to $500 to help with their energy costs through the winter.
This program provides a one-time benefit for individuals that are eligible. So in 2017, we had a little over 100,000 households in our state that received an average benefit of about $500. Again, this money is to be used towards utility and energy bills because they do go up this time of year.
Households have to apply for benefits each year. The assistance program begins on November 1st. If individuals miss the deadline for winter assistance program, they can apply for the summer cooling program if their local service provider offers it. Those interested in the program can call 211 or visit in.gov/IHCDA. The deadline for the Low Income Energy Assistance Program is now June 1st.
In its meeting last night, the Bloomington City Council again took up an agreement between the city and IU Health to buy the IU Health Hospital site on 2nd Street. The city's corporation counsel, Philip Guthrie, introduced the agreement.
Once the hospital has fully completed its construction of its new hospital on the bypass, and they have vacated all of the buildings there, and they have remediated the site. They've actually demolished most of the buildings on Parcel A, that's the main hospital site. They are not going to do anything with the other parcels. They will demolish, then they will remediate, and then after we've inspected it and okayed it, it would be transferred to us.
She said the city signed a letter of intent in December to buy the 24-acre site for $6.5 million. The property is valued at around $16 million. The city will use TIF funds to buy the site, which is made up of four separate parcels. The city will make the purchase in three installments over 3 years. Guthrie said under the agreement, IU Health will pay for and design infrastructure improvements near the new hospital site on Bloomington's east side.
One is improvements at 14th Street and the bypass, and at 10th Street and Pete Ellis Drive. This is to accommodate increased traffic and facilitate 14th is getting across through campus. The city, again, agrees to use its good faith efforts to try and find funding and would pledge that funding to this project if we secure any. And IU Health, if there's a match required, would make any kind of match. IU Health would also design any utility infrastructure improvements out near the new hospital that the city would pay for.
The city does not yet have specific redevelopment plans for the site. Urban planners from the nationally renowned Urban Land Institute presented various recommendations for the site's reuse last Friday. Those include the creation of affordable housing, a community center, and expanded medical. However, the agreement stipulates that the property cannot be sold to a competing hospital system or healthcare provider. Council members Chris Sturbaum, Dave Rollo, and Steve Volan at various points questioned whether further development of the site would require city council approval. Here's council member Volan discussing the point with city controller Jeff Underwood.
More specifically, what if we were so entranced by the proposal of a master developer that not we, but the administration negotiated to sell it for a dollar? I mean, like, because they're going to provide so many other benefits. That's not $5 million. I mean, isn't that what happened at the Trades District? There was three, four years ago, there was a proposal that where we would have given the land in exchange for the project that they were going to develop.
That's one of the tools in the RDC's tool belt. I don't know that they would see it as one big redevelopment project that they give for a dollar. It might be that they're approached by an affordable housing developer, and in order to make it work, then the RDC would transfer the property as the city's contribution to that. It could be that we sell it to them and we put money in the infrastructure. So none of those discussions have taken place. So it's certainly a tool in their tool belt.
Well, I guess I'm going to put it this way. as far as I'm concerned, if the project is worth $6.5 million, even if it's given to a developer, that's still something that should come before council, because it's a substantial investment that we're approving here. And we, in the same way that IU Health doesn't have any guarantee of what kind of a clinic could be formed there, council does not have any particular guarantee about what's going to, you know, what master developer is going to come along. So I guess what I'm asking is, will the administration commit here and now to bringing any proposal for the property to the council?
I don't think either one of us can commit to that. I know that we will take that back to the administration, and certainly they've stated publicly that they want to have a very open and transparent process on the reuse of these properties.
During the council's closing comments, council member Jim Sims echoed his colleagues on the importance of involving the council.
But some of the questions that we've had up here with regard to questioning some of the things with administration, this is not intended to be disparaging in at all in any way, but I think there's been a couple of situations where we question the transparency of what happened. And I think we don't particularly want it to be a third time.
Volan, in turn, echoed the council member Sims' statement.
I have begun to lose faith in this administration's claims of transparency. And I hate to say it in so many words, but there's just been too many incidents that I think that the administration needs to rethink what they mean by that word, and perhaps use more words than just "we want to be transparent."
Volan said while he will support the agreement, he still lacks confidence the site will develop in what he referred to as a humane built environment. The council gave the agreement an unanimous vote of support for the agreement on its second reading last night. Council President Dorothy Granger said IU could simply have just walked away from the site without working with the city.
But some of the questions that we've had up here with regard to questioning some of the things.
We have a huge responsibility to create a good space, huge responsibility. And I think a lot of weight is on us. And I'd like to think that we have time to be thoughtful in this process and that we have no excuse not to make it good.
Councilmember Chris Sturbaum said the Urban Land Institute's proposals is a map and just a start. He also emphasized community involvement as the administration's next step. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Kim Hahn.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograff and Ben Neoff. Slotograff Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or online at slotograflegal.com. Slotograff Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
Major construction and infrastructure projects in Bloomington have brought traffic on the city's southwest side to a standstill during rush hour. City of Bloomington Communications Director Yael Cassander says the concurrent construction projects are the result of different government bodies working on deadlines. This morning, the City of Bloomington and Monroe County announced a partnership to mitigate traffic delays. In today's feature report, Cassander speaks with WFHB News Director Wes Martin about both entities offering monetary incentives to contractors for completing projects ahead of schedule.
The really important thing to remember is that a lot of these things that are happening that you've probably heard about, there are, 4 to 6 major projects going on impacting the south and the west sides of town. They are all happening concurrently because of a bunch of different reasons. Number one, they have different people or different entities leading these projects, but also there are other things that have been fast-tracked because, for example, with the Country Club Bridge project, it was determined kind of during a routine inspection in 2016 that that needed to get done. So the fact that all of these things are happening right now at once is not anything that anyone could kind of prevent. So in order to make the best of their concurrence, we're trying to work with the county to ease the discomfort or the potential discomfort. So one of the big things, the kind of centerpiece of that collaboration, is a partnership to invest in the acceleration of the Country Club Bridge project. So the city has invested $30,000, and the county has invested $30,000, and City of Bloomington Utilities has invested an additional $10,000 to accelerate the rate of completion of that project. Instead of it being done, I think, end of July, it's being pushed up to mid-June, which is really good because that way the period of overlap with the Grimes and Walnut Street sanitary sewer project is going to be minimized a great deal. So that's good news for everybody.
Yael, can you tell me how exactly does putting more money on the table end up expediting these construction projects?
The way that it works actually is it's a financial incentive to the contractor, which is CLR. So they are agreeing to work longer days and put more staff on the project. And so that's how it expedites it. It's just paying them at a higher rate. They will shave days off of the project. For every day that they shave off of the project, the rate goes higher. So that's how that works. The City of Bloomington Utilities Department has also invested about $18,000 in accelerating the Grimes Lane project. So that's the Grimes and Walnut sewer interceptor project that is overdue and was needed to be done, has been on the books for years, but definitely needs to be done to preempt any more environmental damage. Delaying it was going to be an additional $350,000 if we delay it until next year. So even though it kind of has this potential period of overlap with the Country Club Bridge project, it needs to be done this year to keep us from incurring more environmental and financial cost. And so that's being accelerated. So the period of overlap is really minimized to like a couple weeks, probably, ideally, weather permitting. I mean, a whole bunch of other tools and strategies that the city and the county have availed themselves of and have implemented in order to make things easier for everybody on the south and west side of town coming in and going out of.
Commissioner Barge this morning talked a little bit about Monroe County having federally funded projects, and she mentioned that Monroe County has about 18 federally funded projects that they need to get done, I think, by a certain time in order to get those federal matching dollars. Now, does the city have anything like that?
One of the projects, I can't speak to the county's projects, but there's, you know, the Bloomington-Monroe County MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, I think it stands for. And there are funds that are going to run out on the TAP and Rockport intersection improvement project. Those are federal funds, I think 80% federal funds. If that, and that's been in the books for about 10 years. Now, the really big thing to remember here is the reason it's been delayed is not for, you know, procrastination or lack of interest. It's because it's been difficult to implement that project with I-69 not being done. So the fact that Section 5 of I-69 has taken an extra 2 years to get done has delayed that MPO project. But so that is, the Tap Road Interchange is going to open here in about a month or so. So that's going to be able to allow that Tap and Rockport intersection improvement project to get done. And, if that were not to get done, those funds would go away. Those federal funds would go away by December. So that has to be done. So you can see some of the, like, factors that are out of anyone's control and that necessitate these projects being done simultaneously.
And is there anything else that you or the mayor or the city administration wants to tell residents with regards to the ongoing construction around town?
These are all essential and major infrastructure projects, whether it's county or city or the MPO. These are all things that improving our roads, our bridges, and our water systems, these are all things that are just major essential projects that are making our city and our county livable, and not only livable, but a place where the kind of growth that's happening here can be sustained. So these are improvements that are potentially inconvenient right now, but in 20 years, we can be grateful. We're sort of building for the future. So that's, I think, something to keep in mind as you, you know, experience a small delay or have to go on a detour. It's important to remember that it's a little bit of hassle now, but it's going to be a great long-term improvement.
Yael, anything else that you think our listeners should know with regards to either these?
So many ways, and some of them are listed in that press release that you got, but ways that you can cope and anticipate what routes might be congested this summer. We have this really great text traffic alert feature that you can get. You can text 812-558-5987 and receive traffic alerts from the city, and those are not only long-term weekly updates, but also in-the-moment alerts that you'll receive once you text that number. You will be subscribed. You can use many apps like the Waze app. We're putting things all over the place. We have a dedicated site, InRoads. You can follow our Bloomington InRoads page on Facebook or on Twitter. We've even put our our drones out there in order to determine what's happening now to get a baseline and then to be able to collect more data over the summer and to try to minimize places where things are getting congested. So we hope that people will use those because it's also an interactive tool, the app where you can input information and help contribute to lessening that congestion.
Yael Cassander, thank you so much for speaking with us.
You are welcome. Thanks for asking, Wes, and I'm sure there will be updates.
WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaking with City of Bloomington Communications Director Yael Cassander about an agreement between the city and Monroe County to offer cash incentives for the completion of construction projects ahead of deadline.
Support comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
Students all across the nation are planning walkouts to again cry out for gun control. The latest walkouts took place 1 month after the shooting at Parkland High School. The next walkouts, of which there are over 2,300 events planned, are scheduled for Friday, April 20th, which also marks the 19th anniversary of Columbine High School massacre. The walkouts are scheduled to start at 10 a.m., and the students will take 13 seconds to honor the 13 kids that were murdered. We take to the streets to ask you your opinion on the students, the protests, and gun control.
All right, okay, well, I mean, I myself, as you can tell, I'm not from here, so I have a completely different attitude to guns to a lot of people in this country. Without trying to step on any toes, I would support the students because we're at a time now where if you want to make your voice known in a teeming world, you have to be the loudest. You're dealing with a gun lobby who are probably the loudest of all, and they're also armed. So, I mean, I would support the students in as far as they make their voice heard and they make their point without resorting to cheap tactics that other people may use. And plus, they have to be careful of disrupting their own education and other people's lives because they'll only lose support in doing so. So it's a balancing act ultimately. But myself, I would support such measures.
And my honest opinion?
Sure.
Don't control guns, control stupid people. That's pretty much it. I'm a supporter of the Second Amendment. I'm a responsible gun owner. And, I think You gotta control stupid people. You don't blame the AAA for drunk driving, right? Why blame guns for all this violence that's happening?
I think it's a good idea. We need more protection for our students. If not, who's gonna protect our future? I mean, it's ridiculous, you know? All this can be stopped. All this because people are bullying one another. It's sad. This is our America today. This is what we've resulted to. Gun violence. I'm against it. I've got a 6-year-old, and I worry about her safety every day. It scares me. I shouldn't have to teach my 6-year-old what to do in the event of a gunman coming to her school and shooting. It's very heart-wrenching, and my heart goes out to the victims' families. It's very sad.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's amazing. I think it's really cool to see young people stand up for their rights and to take sort of action. I think it's really beautiful, and it's about time.
I mean, that's our right. It's our right as Americans
right.
to choose whether to carry a firearm or not.
I'm very much in favor of it, and I think the whole student movement is impressive. And I'm a former teacher, so.
Yeah. I agree. I admire the students for speaking out against guns and wish that there's a lot more gun control than there is.
It's their prerogative, right? They're just trying to show that they want reform. I don't think the average citizen should have access to military-grade weapons.
If people still want to purchase assault weapons and to get to the nitty-gritty, I feel that certainly you'd have expanded background checks, closing the gun show loophole. I mean, if someone has to wait 2 to 3 weeks to purchase an assault rifle, that should certainly be within the confines of the Second Amendment. So, versus, you know, purchasing a pistol or a single rifle. So if you need an AR-15 with a 30-round clip for home defense, I don't know what country you're living in that you need to turn back an assault of some magnitude that requires such hardware. So, but yeah.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Andrew McCurran and Chuchan G, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Anthony Gomez. Our engineer today is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Kim Hahn.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB News and Public Affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.